You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
You've seen them on the news, at the airport in major sporting events. Detection dogs. They can sniff out explosives and contraband. But how do they do what they do? A dog's nose is so exquisitely sensitive that it's said that where you and I might detect the scent of stew wafting through the air, a dog could pick out the individual ingredients as well as the person who made the meal from the same aroma stream. Though a dog may have the physical ability for the task, takes special training to turn them into potentially life-saving canines. Dr. Cynthia Otto is the director of Penn Vet Working Dog Center in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. She's going to give us a glimpse into the care, training, and ongoing research that goes into these spectacular canines and what you can do to get involved. We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Go to PetcoDeals.com and get $6 off your order of $60 or more and up to 40% off hundreds of items at Petco.
PetcoDeals.com.
But that's not all.
Are you talking to me?
Pet Life Radio listeners, try Audible.com now and get your first 30 days of Audible Listener Gold Membership plan free. And get a free audiobook. Choose from over 100,000 titles. To get this great deal, go to AudibleDeals.com.
That's AudibleDeals.com.
The new Dyson Animal Vacs are powerful bagless upright vacuums for homes with pets. Air muscle and radial root cyclone technology generates the strongest suction power to powerfully remove dust, dirt, and pet hair from the home or car. Go to DysonDeals.com. DysonDeals.com
to order your Dyson Animal Vac today.
Go to PetSmartDeal.com and save up to 30% on awesome gifts for the pets and pet people in your life. Toys, collars, leashes, PetSmart gift cards, treats, and more. Go to PetSmartDeal.com today. PetSmartDeal.com.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Otto, you must have the best job in the world because you are working, but playing with puppies every day. How did you get into this?
This has been a job that has evolved with time. I started as a veterinarian. I've been working with dogs and cats for over 25 years, but the opportunity to work with these dogs first came about back in about 1993 or 94. I had the opportunity to become involved with the Pennsylvania Urban Search and Rescue Task Force that was just getting developed, and I got a whole new perspective on what dogs could do, and it was love at first sight. I was absolutely drawn into the power of these dogs, the ability of these dogs, and the heroism of these dogs.
You watch, especially after seeing 9/11, these dogs out there working in such harsh conditions. It must be so mentally draining for the dog as well as for the handler. How do you get these dogs to work? Is it work for them?
It's not work, and that's what's the great part of it, is it's a game. And to be honest, the mentally draining part is for them, is the send over here or is it over there? Unlike the emotionally draining part that is the handler. So these dogs are looking for their game, and they're trained to find whatever it is. If it's a person in the search and rescue dogs, if it's a bomb for a bomb dog, their biggest joy in life is to find what it is that they're needing to find so they can play. And most dogs are rewarded by tugging or a ball or a toy, and it's really about, I want to be able to play, and in order to play, this is what I'm going to do first, and then it's the best thing in the world.
The Penn Vet Working Dog Center, this is fairly new. Tell me about the opening, because this, when I was reading the information, just seemed like such a heart-tugging ceremony that occurred.
It is very new. We've only been open for a little over 4 months in our physical space. The Working Dog Center itself had an existence. We opened up, officially we were named in 2007, but the real heart and soul of it is our training facility and our puppy program. And we opened on September 11th of 2012. And the reason that we chose that date is that this program is a legacy of those dogs that served at 9/11. It is in honor of them, and it's paying forward to them, really, to identify all of the things that we can to help them be more successful, help the search and rescue dogs in the future be more successful, happier at what they're doing, and really provide those dogs that go forward doing the search and rescue work the opportunity to do the best they can and love it. And our puppies that are in our program are all named after dogs that did work at 9/11. And so we're really proud to have this as a living legacy to the work of those dogs. And not just the puppies, but the science that's going to come out of this and help all dogs as they go forward. So that's really kind of the main emphasis of it, is to look at what we can do to benefit the dogs that have so benefited us.
In the introduction, I mentioned that, boy, it's kind of like most people. You know, we could swim, but we're not going to be able to do the Olympic feats of Michael Phelps. So here you have dogs, and probably majority of the dogs have a pretty good sniffer. But how do you choose your dogs? Are you going to the shelter? Where are your pups coming from?
No, that's a great question. And I think that, you know, the shelters do have dogs that have the potential to do this kind of work. But the complication that we have is that there's so many dogs that need to be evaluated to find a dog that has the physical and mental capacity to do the level of work that's required for these professional athletes. There are programs that are wonderful that are working with some of the shelter dogs. Our goal, because we really want to emphasize the genetics, the physical capability, and the health, is that we're going to top breeders of performance dogs, which means predominantly hunting dogs. And these breeders are really conscientious about the health of their dogs. And so they've done a lot of health testing on the parents of the puppies that we end up accepting into our program. And these breeders are also so committed to our program that they donate these puppies to us.
This must not be an inexpensive proposition, because here you have these top breeders, fabulous puppies, and they're just giving them to you. How much does it cost approximately for a year's training for these pups?
Oh, that's a great question. And given that the puppies are from the beginning already donated, so that doesn't even tally into our cost. We have our program, which is unlike pretty much any other program. The puppies are coming in 5 days a week for their training. So that means we have our facility that we are renting. We have the staffing of that facility, which is only 3 full-time people, and everybody else are volunteers. Even with all of that and other donations that we've had, we're still estimating that it's costing somewhere between $10,000 and $20,000 to have a dog come through the program and be that dog that is going to be a professional detection dog.
How many dogs right now are in this program?
Right now, we're up to 10 dogs, and in, 10 days, we'll be up to 11 dogs, and then we have number 12 coming to join us. We started with 7, and we're gradually increasing the number of dogs. We'll probably top out at 16, just based on the size of our facility and the number of people that we have working, because it's really labor-intensive, given the time that we spend with these dogs to educate them, to train them, to expose them to the environments, and really give them a well-rounded foundation in detection work.
It sounds as though going to school, going to college for these puppies every day, 5 days a week, some very intensive work that they have to do, focusing, yes, it's play. How do you make sure that they don't burn out?
I think that's a great question, and it is part of our training philosophy is that it's all positive, and everything that we do is about the game, the fun, and there's actually a lot of nap time going on in our center, and you know, there are moments it's actually quiet, which is a rare moment.
With 10 puppies, I can imagine that's rare. One to quiet down, and the other one start barking.
Yeah.
You're talking about that there's only 3 full-time staff and the rest are all volunteers. How did you find these volunteers? Because it sounds as though you're talking about a lot of people coming in.
We have a lot of people and they're amazing expertise in various areas. And what we did was we put out a call for volunteers. And right after we opened, we had over 300 people sign up. All of a sudden, we were overwhelmed with the response, and we had to close down our volunteer program to new volunteers because we needed to get everybody trained and to a level that we could have them doing various things with the dogs. And so we're slowly allowing new volunteers to join us. But these volunteers are so essential. They help us with walking the dogs. They help us with the husbandry, so brushing the dogs, brushing their teeth, trimming their nails, those kinds of things. And they're moving into more and more of the training as they get more experienced with us and they've gone through sort of the different levels of training them, then they can start to help with training the dogs for maybe some of the simple obedience. And some of our more regular volunteers are actually handling some of the dogs in their searches, which is a really exciting place to be.
Being able to watch this baby, because that's what they are. I think all of us who've had puppies going, they're little spazzes. How can you get them to focus on doing, you know, anything other than you're trying to get them potty trained? And here you are getting these babies to find objects, to learn their detection work. Describe the day in the life of one of your babies coming into the working center.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and it gives me shivers to think about what these babies are indeed doing. I mean, they're really acting like big dogs most of the time, and then they have their time to be just babies and just dogs. So the puppies live with foster families and are dropped off in the morning at our school somewhere between 7 and 9 in the morning. We usually will start off with maybe a little bit of obedience, so some walking on a leash properly and sitting and lying down and stay. It's just to kind of keep them under a little bit of control. We don't do a lot of intensive obedience because we do want that energy. The next big fun thing that the puppies usually do in the morning is the search work. So with McBain, our newest puppy, we're starting off with some pretty simple searches. And so this morning when I was working with him, we just had his tug. We'd play with him for a little bit, and then we'd throw his tug so it was on the other side of a barrier so that he couldn't quite see it, but he saw where it went. And then we'd tell him, search. And off he would go, and he would find his tug, and so proud of himself, he would strut on back. So that's, it was heartwarming to watch him do this. Our big dogs, which are still babies, they're only 6 months old. Some of our older dogs are, you know, pushing 7 months, but that's it. They'll go into one of the buildings on our campus, and we have a lot of empty buildings in the location we're at, so big old warehouses. And what Anne Marie D'Angelo, our head trainer, will do is she'll take their tug toy, and they usually have a leather tug toy that we play with them with, and then she'll hide that. Not only will she hide one, she usually hides about 3 of these. And at that point, we'll have the handler who's working with that dog release the dog and send them into the warehouse and, you know, follow them in and tell them to search. And the dog will just look and find and track it down. And some of the dogs, I mean, it's like, they're done. That was like 3 minutes and they've already found all 3 of these tugs. It's just so amazing. And you may ask, well, why are you using a tug instead of like a bomb or something like that? And it's because we're teaching the dogs to do the basic behavior. We don't know what they're going to end up looking for. So we want them to understand the game. And eventually, when we decide what their best job is, then we will introduce that odor that they will be finding for the rest of their lives.
Speaking of odor, I know one of the things on your website was talking about scentability classes. And one of my clients at the practice has Tibetan Terriers, and she's gotten into scent training and going out in these competitions. So it's not just your special dogs that can do scent work, but it's basically now a sport. Is that correct?
That is, and it's one of the best sports ever because pretty much any dog can participate. You can be a big dog, a little dog, because in the sport, they don't have to cross rubble piles and leap tall buildings and things. It is a controlled competition. And I remember going to an event and there was a blind and deaf dog doing this work. And it just gives them something to do. It's such a natural for dogs to use their noses, and it's so much fun. It provides a real engagement and interaction for it. It's a great sport.
Dr. Otto, tell us a little bit. I had intimated in the beginning of in the introduction that a dog nose is so different than ours in their capabilities of detecting these small amounts, these molecules. How do they do it?
That's such a great question. And they're basically wired differently in so many ways. The first thing is they have more of the receptors in their nose to catch the little odor molecules. So they have more than people do. They also, as you might have noticed for most dogs, have much larger noses. So they have more surface area for those receptors to be there so that they can capture the odor. And then one of the coolest things is the way they sniff. And if you've ever sort of listened to a dog when he's starting to sniff, you can kind of hear him changing in that breathing. And what that does is it forces the air that they're breathing in to swirl into the areas where there are the most receptors. And so that enhances the delivery of these odors to the receptors. And then you put all of that together and you put it with their ability to discriminate and recognize and remember, you've got the most amazing detection machine. And dogs are more sensitive than most of the machines that we have out there for odor detection.
How many molecules, if you were to say you had a thimbleful, and that's what a person is able to smell of a carrot in that stew, versus a dog, how much does a dog need?
You know, that is a great question. And I've seen a lot of people make statements, and I actually just last week was trying to find some research that would support what it is that they're able to detect. And it's probably parts per billion, but I haven't been able to pin down how sensitive is a dog really. One statement that I had read was like a drop in a swimming pool. It's that incredible.
Teeny.
And to give you a sense of it, one of the detection careers that some dogs are employed in now is detecting bed bugs. So a bed bug dog can go into a facility, and they usually go in after the place has been treated to see if there's any live bugs left. And they are trained. The standard is that they can detect one live bed bug in a building, in a room, which just boggles my mind.
And if it boggles your mind, you know, Dr. Otto, that it has to be mind-bending. What are some of the various, we know about bomb dogs, we know that the agricultural services will use dogs. For instance, you come into the airport, you come in from Hawaii, and they will say, you have fruit and vegetables, something in your luggage, going, I forgot that was there, or you try to smuggle it in. What are some of the various scents that dogs typically are being trained to detect?
Well, probably the most common, as you said, are the explosives, and all kinds of explosives, including the homemade explosives. So in the military, it's a really important role for the dogs. Drugs are a huge, huge thing that the dogs are used for, mostly in our police departments. In the prison, they have dogs that detect contraband. So cell phones aren't allowed. They have cell phone detection dogs. It's like, how do you train a dog to detect a cell phone? And it's really interesting. You know, what is it that's unique about cell phones? And there's a metal within cell phones that they think is the sort of the factor that they're targeting. There are dogs that can detect money. So particularly when people are smuggling money. So that's currency detection dogs. There are dogs that detect endangered plants. so they could go out into a field and find out, okay, look, here is one of those plants. They can detect endangered animals or invasive plants or animals. And in Florida, they're being used to help track down the pythons. And then we're really interested in some of the medical detection areas that the dogs are working in, the cancer detection, where they'll actually look at different samples or smell different samples, whether it be from breath or from a blood sample, and identify whether there's an odor consistent with a particular type of cancer in that. And that's a really exciting field. Seizure detection, the diabetic alert dogs that let people know when their blood sugar is low. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And almost every week I read a new article about some dog being used for some other detection world. It's kind of limitless.
And it's so much more fun to have them around versus a dumb machine. You have this fabulous dog that, oh, by the way, you can stop, give it a pet. It brings your blood pressure down. It's a win-win situation.
Yeah, and here on the East Coast, the Amtrak stations have dogs in the station. You know, we don't have to go through the metal detectors and things because there's dogs. And you know, there's been some evidence that even in the airports, it would be much more efficient and much more effective than a lot of the other detection methods. But we're still working on you know, getting more dogs in the airports.
I would much prefer to have a dog kind of go by me, give me a little sniff, give it a little pet. I know that's not happening, versus going through the x-ray machines. I know nobody knows it's me, but it's kind of like a bit embarrassing. We're talking right now with Dr. Cynthia Otto. She is the director of the Penn Vet Working Dog Center in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We'll be right back after this short break learning more about these spectacular canines. Stay tuned.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Hi, this is Tim Link, animal communicator and pet expert, and host of Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Have you ever wanted to know what your pet is really thinking? Do you want to find out if they truly understand what you're trying to tell them? Ever wish you could build a better understanding and closer relationship with your pet? Well, now you can. Learning to communicate with animals is a four-part on-demand workshop. In the workshop, you'll learn the essential techniques that are necessary to communicate with animals, including what is animal communication, breathing correctly to achieve the perfect state to communicate with your animals at a deeper level, using guided meditation exercises and method to communicate with animals, and how to send and receive information from your animals. So if you're wanting to learn how to communicate and connect with your animals at a deeper level, visit petliferadio.com/workshop and purchase and download Learning to Communicate with Animals. You'll be glad you did.
Hi, this is Marcy Davis and my service dog Whistle, and we're your hosts of Working Like Dogs on Pet Life Radio. Working Like Dogs is the show where you can learn everything you ever wanted to know about working animals or working dogs. Whether you're a member of a working dog team, or you've just seen a working dog or animal out at the mall or the grocery store, and you're curious about how these amazing animals work with their human partners, then Working Like Dogs is the show for you. Join us for the inside scoop at Working Like Dogs on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets
on Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Otto, again, you have the job. I can hear it in your voice. You are just enthused. You're excited. You like going to work.
I do. It's so much fun.
You were talking before the break about your training facility and also mentioned some of the dogs in prison situations looking for contraband. But I also know that in prison situations, some of the inmates are actually training dogs for explosive detection work and service work. Why is your facility different/better than puppies behind bars?
We love puppies behind bars, and we were actually inspired by their program. I spent a day with them up in one of their prisons, and I was so impressed with what they're doing and the benefits for the inmates. But our program is different in that we're doing a little bit more. We're also more intense in our training of the puppies. So our puppies are living in foster families So they're in the environment. They're used to living with people. And we will place these dogs in careers where they will not be kenneled, but live with their handlers. Our dogs are getting the training 5 days a week. And with puppies behind bars, the inmates are doing training, but they only have formal training, at least in the one prison that I was with them. I think it was only 1 day a week that they were able to do a formal class. And the rest of it is a lot of mentoring and other things. You know, so our puppies are really getting extensive training and really different environments. We have these warehouses, we have these big dirt piles, we have all of the things that they potentially could be exposed to when they're growing up. And that's a great opportunity that we're able to offer that wouldn't be a possibility in a prison. But, you know, the Puppies Behind Bars folks have totally inspired me. They were what made me realize that starting with these puppies at 8 weeks of age, you make such a difference.
Being in that home situation, it makes it seem like, you know, these are pups that have a real life and a work life. What happens if a puppy washes out of the program?
That's a great question, and we actually prefer to think of it as being repurposed as opposed to being washed out. So what we're training our puppies for is a foundation of detection work. And the really cool thing about that is because we're not taking all of our dogs and saying, you will be bomb dogs, we're giving them the opportunity to kind of declare their skills and their forte. So it may be that one of our dogs is going to be a bomb dog, but another is going to really excel at search and rescue, and another might be a diabetic alert dog. And because our goal is to provide the foundation, what I like to refer to it as, they're basically in liberal arts college with us, and then they're going to go on to their master's degree. But they're not all going to go for the same master's degree. And so we'll be able to direct them to the places that they will be successful. Now, certainly there may be some dogs that for physical reasons don't, you know, aren't able to succeed. And those dogs, we would look for a home, a you know, private home where they would have a life that would take advantage of their high energy. So they're probably not going to be couch potatoes. So probably either a sporting environment or at least definitely somebody that's doing the nose work so that they can continue to keep their brains and bodies active.
Talking about, you know, this high energy, that means also having to be concerned with orthopedics and the genetics and nutrition. You know, that's such an area where people coming in with puppies and trying to make sure that they grow appropriately. What is your center doing now for that type of research, genetics, orthopedics?
Well, we're really excited about where we're going with a fitness program. So we're looking at these puppies and implementing different strengths and coordination and exercises for them so that we can build that. We also are very careful about what kind of activities, so the repetitive injury, so our puppies aren't jumping, you know, repetitively over jumps or anything. They do jump on things because they're puppies. But as far as sort of that repetitive jumping up or down, so that that might cause some damage to their growing bones. But the other really big thing that we know as far as arthritis, which is one of the biggest worries that we have with any dog, and particularly with the working dogs, is the weight control. Our puppies get weighed every single day. And they're actually trained to walk over and sit on the scale. And so we're really monitoring that closely. And trying to keep our pups at really optimal body weight. And we had a little bit of a slip, like many people did over the break, because we were closed over the holiday and our puppies weren't getting quite the level of activity and they were still getting fed at the same level. And it's like, I think some of our puppies might need to cut back a little bit on their food. So we carefully follow what they're doing that way. And then the building of what we call core strength and body awareness so that they can move carefully and, you know, with a lot of control and balance, particularly because we have them climbing on unstable surfaces and things. So that whole fitness program is something that we're hoping to put into a more formal research study so that we can document this is a program that does make a difference for these dogs and can influence, you know, how well they're able to manage and prevent injuries.
The type of information that you're gleaning from this research really seems to have implications for the person who has a sporting dog, a hunting dog, the sled dog, whatever, because you can really make generalizations of going, this is an active animal, this is what it needs. This is spectacular. How is that information going to be disseminated?
You absolutely nailed it on the head, though, as far as the application. And a lot of it, we're trying to put a lot of information out there through our website. But we hold conferences, our upcoming conferences, and it is in April in St. Louis at the Purina Event Center. And it's training the dog and training the handler. So what it is, it's open to dog handlers. It's open to scientists, to veterinarians. It's really anybody who wants to come. And we bring together all of these different levels of knowledge, and we put that out there so that people can exchange that and learn. And people who might be with guide dogs can hear how people, even in the agility world, are training their dogs or improving the performance of their dogs. We have Dr. Bess Pierce, who's done a really great amount of work with fitness in the military dogs. You know, how can that apply to, say, the search and rescue dog? So how can we cross-fertilize this information? Can we share the information? So our conference, which happens about every 2 years, is one mechanism. The website, for sure. We have a newsletter that we put out. And we're hoping to start even doing some DVDs or maybe even, you know, some books on the fitness side of things, so we can provide people with those resources, especially once we have the evidence and the data to say, yes, this is the way that we would recommend doing it.
And I believe some of the research that you've also done, so many people watching, myself included, those dogs at 9/11 at the World Trade Center, breathing in all of this debris, knowing what they were exposed to, seeing their little paws walk all over the detritus that was there. What's the follow-up? I know so many people have medical issues, but if I'm correct, the dogs were watched very closely, and thankfully, they did not seem to be adversely affected as badly as people. Is that correct?
That is correct, and we really have to reach out and thank the American Kennel Club Canine Health Foundation. They funded this study now in its 11th year, monitoring the health and the behavior of the dogs that responded to 9/11. And to me, the most remarkable thing that came out of that study was that search and rescue dogs, which are predominantly Labradors and German Shepherds, on average live to be 12 years of age. And for me, thinking about a big dog and a hardworking dog, that they're living that long is fabulous news. We do know that 40% of the dogs did die of cancer, but 40% of our control dogs did too. There was absolutely no difference between the control dogs and the deployed dogs. And the control dogs were search and rescue dogs that had not gone to 9/11. So we have not been able to identify any adverse effects, particularly no respiratory problems associated with the work at 9/11.
That is absolutely amazing, knowing the hard work that they did. Dr. Cynthia Otto, the director of the Penn Vet Working Dog Center in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I could go on for another half hour just learning more about what you're doing. If people listening want to learn more, if they want to contribute, because I know you can always take money, where should they go? What can they do?
Absolutely. We are entirely privately funded, so we would love people's support to keep this program going. We really need to expand it as well as continue it. But our website is www.pennvet.org. And you can like us on Facebook. We've got a great active Facebook page. Lots of pictures and videos get posted pretty much every day.
And then if anybody lives close by, I understand that you have the scenting classes, trick classes, fit to work classes, first aid, a lot of ways that people can improve their own pets' lives at home, correct?
That is correct, and we would certainly welcome people who are interested in contacting us, and we can, you know, we're running classes that run for four weeks, so every month we're starting a new class just to get people exposed and get the idea of, you know, what it is like to work with your dog and train your dog, because it so changes your relationship.
Dr. Cynthia Otto, thank you so much for being with us today. No matter what type of pet that you have at home, love it, work with it, take it to your veterinarian, be the best possible pet owner that you can be. So this is Dr. Bernadine Cruz with The Pet Doctor. Thank you so much for listening. Mark, our producer, thank you very much. Take care. Listen again next week. We'll have more information for you. So enjoy your pet.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.